Hi everyone, welcome to STEPS audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEPS events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Anagami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Welcome to this session around budget allocation. I'm Juliet, and I'm running a podcast production company called Pineapple. And I'm here with, as our lovely host said, Bassem and Abir, who are going to be our thought leaders today, talking us through the art of budget allocation and optimization, because obviously we know this is a huge factor in a brand's success. So just to kick us off, give us a little bit more information about you. Tell us about yourselves and also how important budget allocation is to your business or the businesses that you work with. You want to go first, Abir?
Maybe you can start with the meaning of your name.
Well, my name means smell, good smell. So it's Arabic. Fragrance. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
That's not what you told me.
The English version is different. Starting with Tech Rebel, we started a software development company like 6 years ago. And then during the growth of the company, we founded a venture building studio where we acquired brands, acquired businesses that were looking to scale. So it's an incubation / accelerator platform that we deal with. So collectively, I'm part of about 8 companies spread in the United States, as well as Dubai, as well as Qatar, Saudi, and Ukraine. For me, budget allocation is a critical factor in scalability. Starting a company from $1,000 to a multi-million dollar organization spread all over and 7th fastest growing company in Houston, I've kind of went through all the cycles where, you have little or no budget to allocate. It's not something that you think about, to where, you have millions of dollars that you have to allocate in a span of a year. So I think it's critical when you've, defined your metrics well, when you define your ROI well, to realize how you scale and, what your acquisition cost is and what your spend is and how you could generate potential revenue. I'm sure we're going to go a lot more in detail, but I'll give it to Bassem to introduce.
Yeah. Just for context, who is in a business that generates over $1 million a year? You can raise your hand. $1 million revenue in a year. $5 million? $10 million? All right, cool. Good for you. Are you the owner? Are you the owner?
You didn't say 100. Maybe there's 100 here.
100 million? Nice. All right. Just to give probably the right stories. So my name is Bassem, or Bass, they call me. I started the first business 10 years ago. It's a digital agency, digital marketing agency. We have an office here and an office in Miami. And then started a couple of other businesses, e-com, listing platforms. Some of them failed, some of them still alive, some of them are profitable, some of them not. And of course, as a service marketing agency, we work with a lot of clients, been doing that for over 10 years. And budget allocation is not important at all. I'm just kidding. I would say it really depends on the space you're in. Like, I don't want to say, be the guy that knows, but it really depends on the space you're in. It really depends on the markets you're in. Definitely, I would say, if I want to say one thing which is very, very important is data analytics, which a lot of people that I speak to, senior marketing people, CEOs of businesses, and I'm talking about big players, they don't focus a lot on data analytics. So they do things, they focus on brand marketing, and it's of course difficult to gauge and to understand data. But I talk as well to a lot of people that are super focused on data, And the people that are super focused on data, they're way more successful and they allocate their budgets way better. I think we're going to talk a lot more about that data analytics, and so I'll just leave it here.
Yeah, that's a great start. So you've both been looking at budget allocation for some time in a variety of different ways. So I'd love to kind of kick us off by talking about how things have evolved in your experience of budget allocation and where we're at now. What trends are happening now? What can we know about this moment as well? Whoever wants to go first.
A beer.
I think it's become a lot more competitive and a lot more diverse. Obviously, like, you know, when we started social media allocating budget towards advertising on Facebook was a thing. Now it's called Meta. And now it's a norm where companies, and then, you know, there's TikTok, there's influencer marketing, there's affiliate marketing, there's so many different aspects. And it can be very jarring, confusing, and I mean, like, we kind of saw a show of hands of companies that are above 1 million, so I'm gonna keep my focus on the under $1 million market. Thank you for that, Basim. So I think when you're starting off and you're defining your budget allocation strategy, it's important to understand that it's a, you know, it's a testing phase. Like, you have to iterate as you go. The way I look at it is, define your, you know, first look at your competitors, right? Like, you look at what your competitors are spending on, and understand, you know, what the metrics look like. You can use SimilarWeb, you can use Ahrefs, you can use several tools to understand how your competitors are spending across the different channels, and define a metric that you're comfortable with, right? Like, it's very important to understand, because we've all been there, like, at least I have, right? Like, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars and figuring out that the metrics just don't work. So you need to set the expectations, and then you need to sort of allocate the budget accordingly and then tweak accordingly. So, like, in terms of your question, sorry, I kind of sidestep a little bit. It's a lot more complex now than it used to be. There are a lot more diverse options, but I think it represents an opportunity for new brands to scale, because there are a lot of markets that are opening up that the new the older brands haven't really perfected. So TikTok, for example, or micro influencers, for an example, these are all you know, channels that you can sort of activate really fast. And then additionally, personality branding goes a long way. I know that you're a podcast host, so you know a lot about that. But really connecting with your target audience is the biggest driver for growth for small businesses. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's more complex, but it's more fun. So
perfect. And would you agree, Basim?
No.
In terms of how things, in terms of how things have evolved and what you're seeing now.
We're gonna have a beer after, man, together. Don't worry. What's the question again?
How has this evolved? How have you seen budget allocation kind of differ, grow, and what are the trends that you're seeing now?
So I'm not going to give examples of the big brands, right? Because these guys, they have big budgets, they can work with top influencers and celebrities, and they can, you know, work with AI influencers and whatever, right? We're not going to talk about the guys that have a lot of money and they don't know what to do with these budgets, right? Getting here, talking about businesses that generate $1 million, $2 million. And if you want to take 20% of that, it's not a lot of money, right? If you're generating $1 million a year and if you want to take 20%, and usually it's 10%, if you want to take 10% of $1 million, it's $100,000 a year to spend. That's not a lot of money. That's not going to generate a lot of traffic, not going to generate a lot of impressions. So what would you do in this case as a B2B or a B2B2C brand? So definitely partnerships go a long way. So you work with other businesses. I know that a lot of businesses, they don't like to work with listing platforms or aggregators. Let's say Talabat, or for example, the restaurants, they hate working with Talabat, or hotels, they hate working with booking.com, right? Because they take a huge cut from them. And as well, brands, they don't like to be on Amazon because they think it's diluting their brand and they take, you know, a big cut from them. But that's very important, right? Because It just generates, first of all, reach. It builds your brand name and equity, and it generates business. So that's easy. Influencer marketing. I talk to a lot of businesses, small businesses, small and medium businesses. Micro influencers definitely go a long way as well. Why? Because again, they create impressions to brands that you cannot, to users that you cannot reach. And second, they generate traffic to your pages, to your website, and that translates obviously into sales. So I create a content, man. Most businesses don't want to create content. And I'm talking about the businesses that generate $1 and $2 million, right? You're stuck. You don't know how to grow. You don't have a lot of money. Just create content. And everybody, it took me 4 years to start a podcast, 4 years. And it took me 2 years to start creating my own videos, my own post. And if you just go on my Instagram and you look at the first post, like I look at it now and I'd be like, man, what did I create back then? And I struggled to create, to be in front of a camera, right? And to read scripts. And I didn't know how I should deliver it and how I should produce it. And now I have, you know, this guy here with me, my buddy, my younger brother, I call him. He works with me full time. He does all the videos. And I don't spend a lot of time. I just talk to the camera now and I have a podcast. So creating content go a long way, especially for a B2B business, because when a potential client lands on my business, on my social media pages, they see who I am. They see who we are as a company. They, if a marketing lands on my page and consume a couple of videos, they'll be like, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. I like him or I don't like him. And then generate trust, and of course, it increases our conversion. So creating content goes a long way, and you can do it for very, very cheap, very, very cost-effective ways. So I would definitely focus on doing that. I mean, I could talk about this topic, and I'm sure we can for you know, a few hours, but I think we'll leave it here as well.
Yeah, I think that's really useful advice. And when we're thinking about this kind of budget allocation, how important is the data? How important is data tracking? How important are the insights that you're finding? And how are you using those? Or how are the businesses that you're working with using those? Yeah.
So I think one of the biggest mistakes that most small businesses make when they're sort of scaling is looking at setting the right metrics in place. I feel that's critically, critically important. And I've seen that with a lot of businesses that we've acquired, a lot of businesses that we've scaled. The first thing that we do is set them up with CRMs like HubSpot or some of the other Zoho or, you know, Salesforce or whatever you guys potentially would use. It's critically important to set the right pieces in place for the future because, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, when you're doing a top-down budget analysis where you're defining your campaigns or strategies, you need to be looking at historic data. And you're not going to have that if you're not tracking from day one. And it can tell you a lot about, you know, what your business actually gets out of your spend, right? Like, I mean, there's a concept called attribution modeling where let's say that you're running Google ads or you're running Facebook ads or whatever. It doesn't mean that that's what's actually generating revenue. Your revenue could be generated by, you know, an organic activity like, you know, Basim mentioned content marketing or influencer marketing or whatever, right? So you shouldn't just be looking at the last attribution metric, which is, let's say, your ad campaign or whatever. It could just be one of the contributing factors. So when you define the right specific steps, I realize now that I'm using a lot of jargon, so let me break it down for you. Whatever you're doing right now, set yourself with a free HubSpot account. I mean, guarantee it's going to be like a good, I mean, it's free, so it's not an investment, but later on you can use, you know, the paid versions as well. There is, you can automate your email flows by, you know, setting up, you know, sort of defining your demographics in terms of signups or whatever it is that you're trying to like sort of target, and then you can send them drip campaigns. Automate your social media through HubSpot as well. So you have your calendar set up, you have your navigation set up. So, you know, in the campaign, if a customer responds to something, then they can then see a post about something else. This is all organic. This has nothing to do with actual media buying, right? But it sets you up for success because whenever you see that the results are starting to come in, then you can implement your ad strategy to augment those results, to scale those results. So to your question, you know, data is super important. But in order for you to measure data, you need to set the right KPIs, this right metrics in place to measure it, and then act on it based on assumptions that you've created through hypotheses or trend analysis using competitors or whatever. I hope I answered that question.
Yeah, you definitely did. Bassem, do you have anything to add?
Yeah. I overlook, so in the business and the digital marketing agency that I'm co-founded with a few partners back then, I overlook the performance marketing side of the business. So I'm very, very analytical. And for me, everything is data. So if you ask me, I say data is extremely important, right? And if you ask a brand person, data is not probably as important. I'm trying to think of examples or, you know, how it can relate to you as a business, as a smaller business. I would say A-B test. I don't know if you guys A-B test. For smaller businesses, right? Like the bigger businesses, you'd be like, hey, what are you talking about A-B test? But like for smaller businesses, A-B test. And we do a lot of A-B testing. And you can easily do A-B testing, right? So A-B test, I don't know if you know what that means. But let's say you 50% of users see your homepage and 50% of your other users see a different page, right? So you can easily do that. You can do it on your landing pages. You can do it with your emails. You can do it with your Instagram. You can do it with anything and everything you do, right? Your media, your ads, anything and everything. And you'd be surprised. Like I look sometimes at the meta business, let's say the meta ads, one offer that we're running for any business, two separate, just ad creative. One ad creative gives 1% conversion and another one gives 2% conversion, which is double, right? Same cost per click. So just by doing small tweaks like this, you can see a big difference. And again, if you're like, if I split it between data analytics, right? So if we talk, for example, about, I say to people, like if you're driving traffic to your landing page, just make sure that your landing page is actually good. And how can you know if it's good? You just have to A/B test. Just run another variant of your landing page. That's the easiest way, right? Rather say, yeah, it's good. You don't know if it's good. The easiest way is to just create a second landing page. So yeah, data analytics with a smaller budget or even with a bigger budget, right? Like you just optimize. You optimize your ad spend. You optimize. You increase your ROI just by doing A/B testing, man. Easy, I would say.
Great, thanks. And if we're thinking about allocating that budget, whatever size it might be, what are your thoughts on online versus offline budget? How do you navigate that balance? And do you guys have any kind of success stories of navigating the balance, the case studies?
I thought we were going to skip that question. there's one more thing that I wanted to add from the last question, which Bassem brought up, and I think it was very interesting. Landing page. How many of you guys use Hotjar? Raise of hands. Beautiful. Definitely go in and implement Hotjar or Crazy Egg or any of the other sort of tools that are out there. Some of them are free. Look at what your user is seeing when they come to your landing page. You know, what are they actually doing when they, what are they focusing on? What's your heat map like, right? And then look at your analytics data. Like, what are they going through the different steps? So I want you guys to understand, if you're under $1 million business, you can experiment to kingdom come. Where Bassem mentioned A/B testing, it's not just something that big businesses have to do. Small businesses are almost, it's critical to their you know, survival to A/B test. Why do I say that? Because big brands, you know, they have approval processes, they have committees, they have a lot of hassle when they have to implement changes. Smaller businesses, they can A/B test in a matter of minutes now with the advent of AI. You know, you can create landing pages based off of dynamic, feedback that you're getting from your ad campaign, like automatically creating landing pages based on what your user behavior is. There's tools out there. Additionally, when we talk about ad budgets, definitely look up partners with Google AdSense or Facebook, because you can get free credit for most of these platforms that you can utilize to test out different strategies and campaigns, right? So my job here, you know, as a venture builder is always to provide value to the businesses that we acquire or to businesses that I meet right here. So, you know, look at small things that you could potentially do to really efficiently optimize your budget. And one more thing that I feel like most businesses overlook is defining your buyer journey. Like if it comes to, if they come to a landing page, are they getting an email alert saying that thank you for signing up with us? Or are they getting a drip campaign that follows through with their conversion to make sure that they are eventually converting? Do you have a cart abandonment prompt in your landing page if you're an e-commerce startup? So you need to look at all those things, because at the end of the day, if you're spending $1,000, I mean, that could be a month's profit for you guys, right? So you want to make sure you squeeze out as much juice as you can from the lemon, you know, before you switch to a different campaign. To your question, about online, offline marketing. This is an interesting one, because I feel like, and again, I'm trying to contextualize it from a small business perspective. I feel like, you know, I mean, with everything that's going on in the online platform, we always forget about offline. But what you have to understand that for small businesses, offline has a huge component of you know, sort of growth and scalability, and people overlook that. What do I mean by that? So if you have a restaurant, and if you have a front-facing business where you're interacting with customers, ask your customers, why, how do they know about you? What made them decide to come to you? What made them come to your doorstep? Simple things like that, even adding a form on your website that says, how did you get to know about us, is critical. Because when you look at Google Analytics, it's just going to show you, you know, they came from direct search or Google search or SEO, whatever. And you're not going to get the right data to actually put into your campaign metrics for later on. And it's very, very critical, you know, on the offline side for you to interact with your buyers and then create an omni-channel experience throughout your marketing mix. If you're getting your storefront visitors, look at geo-ad targeting. The people around you, the businesses around you, you can use Facebook to hyper target like a 10 mile radius or 20 mile radius, or for people that are not from the US, kilometer radius. So you can then use that to retarget them and get the customers that are near you first. Look at GMB ads and what you can do with that. They are super cheap compared to, you know, just simple Google ads, display ads, whatever. So you can get the most out of your ROI by using that as your first media spend. And again, like I said, you can get free ad credits up to $1,000 in most of the platform sites. So do look into that.
It's really interesting. Actually, I'd love to hear from you, Bassam, on those kind of two points, online, offline, but also customer experience and how we can kind of really channel the customer's needs through our budget allocation. If you can work those both into one answer, that would be amazing. No pressure.
Yeah. Online, offline, and if we talk about the majority of businesses that generate less than $5 million, as I understood, I mean, offline marketing, what is offline marketing, right? If you talk, I'm just trying to think, what is offline marketing? Because there are so many things in offline marketing. There's a like an out of home or like a billboard on Sheikh Zayed that costs you, you know, a few $100,000 a month. And there's you producing a small event that can cost you, you know, you can do a barter deal with whatever one of your partners, and that will not cost you much. So really, whatever makes sense. I know that social or digital is cheap and easy. That's why a lot of businesses invest in it. And trackable. And of course, now with third party cookies, it's becoming more difficult to understand and to target the right audiences on the right channels. But I would say definitely, like, I would not talk to a big brand how to split a budget, right? Because there's brand, like if you're talking to a big brand, there's the brand exercise, the brand marketing, and there's the performance marketing. And then, you know, it's a completely different strategy. But for smaller businesses that generate $1-3 million, that's not a lot of money if you're generating that, right? You just have a couple $100,000 a year. So, definitely digital. It's trackable. Just make sure that you have everything set up to know, you know, to understand your data. And the second part of the question about users, what's like, how would we...
How you're reaching your target audience, how best to reach that target audience.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to drive traffic first, because now it's becoming more difficult to target, right? With the data restriction, with the cookie and data restrictions. But I'd say the users that land at least on your website, on your mobile app, you understand this data because you know what they're doing on your website, how much time they're spending, what pages are navigating, what they're, you know, what they're adding to cart, like what contact page they're going to, what clicks they're clicking on, and so forth, right? So I would say, in terms of understand, so that's how you understand obviously the user behavior, right? So, and with that, and you, let's say you're running meta ads, you can create lookalike audiences, and you start targeting the right people, so you don't just burn your money on just spending. Something like that.
Sounds good. Yeah. We've just got a couple of minutes left, so what I'd really love from you guys is some challenges that either you faced or businesses that you work with have faced in this space, and ideally solutions to those challenges in a kind of budget allocation world. Do you have any lovely case studies you could send us off with feeling inspired?
Go, go ahead, man. Give me a break.
Challenges.
And solutions, mostly, most importantly. Yeah.
That's a difficult one. So I think, you know, we've all been there. I think, at least in my case, where, you know, we've, like I mentioned before, we exhausted hundreds of thousands of dollars in sort of ad spend and got nothing out of it. And I think, you know, it kind of goes back to the same thing that I was referring to earlier. You have to set the hypothesis right up front, right? You don't just spend, you know, like even if it's $1,000 in Google Ads, what are you aiming to get out of it? And then, you know, if you're not getting that, so obviously you're not going to get acquisition in terms of customers, but you could perhaps look at clicks, you could look at impressions and define what the metrics are that you're trying to get. And then if you're not getting those metrics, then switch right away. Don't think about sunk cost fallacy or whatever. Like, you focus on something else. One of the things, and I know we have 2 minutes left, so I want to make it, you know, sort of tangible. We were talking about offline marketing, and it's an interesting thing because I have a case study that I wanted to share. One of the startups that we are scaling, which is going to be at Web Summit as an exhibitor, is a restaurant management system. And we're going after a market cap of $200 billion that our competitors own, which are large competitors in the US market. So, their advertising budget is in the millions or in tens of millions of dollars, right? So how do we compete in that space? That was an interesting sort of thing that we considered. And the solution that we came up with was communities. We started building a community around restaurant owners and influencers, food bloggers and critics in the restaurant space. So we started inviting influencers from the restaurant space to join us in talking to the restaurant owners, and the cost of these events were super low, right? Like, you know, ranging from $500 to $1,000 at most. And then we started to converse with them on how technology is changing the restaurant industry. And in the audience, we invited restaurant owners. When we started phrasing the questions a certain way, the influencers start talking about our product, Serveasy, and how that's going to revolutionize the restaurant space. We didn't pay them. You know, they were coming there just to talk about tech and, you know, how tech is changing the world. But we phrased the question in a way that they start talking about what we are doing and how we can revolutionize the industry. That allowed a snowball effect of getting those restaurant owners that we really wanted to join us on a subscription basis and increase our sales exponentially with a budget of 500 to 1,000 dirhams, right? And that is what kind of allowed us to step into new markets and things like that. And then we use the content that we were generating there by running social ads and going after a larger audience and connecting with them. Similarly, we also ran a UGC, user-generated content marketing strategy, where we started to give certifications to restaurant staff that they could then put up on their LinkedIn status, which would then allow us to get traffic from those social platforms to generate more hyper growth for the business. It's things like these, tactics like these, that allow small businesses to scale drastically in markets that are overlooked by big businesses. And that is what makes entrepreneurs brilliant. And that is what allows unicorns to be born. Thank you for the question.
Great. Awesome.
6 minutes, 6 seconds left. Work with the right people. Like, I know smaller businesses, I'm part of small businesses, and work with the right people. If you cannot hire them, partner with them. Give them sweat equity, hire consultants, talk to your friends. Just work with the right people. Because you could work with the wrong person, and you can get out of business. And I've seen it. I talk to daily different people, different clients for the past 10 years. A lot of businesses just did it completely wrong just by hiring the wrong people because they couldn't afford it. I got into a business by getting sweat equity, and now it's one of the largest e-commerce platforms here. They gave me sweat equity because they couldn't afford me, right? So hire the right people or partner with them if you cannot hire them. That's what I would say for anything that you're doing, right? HR, logistics, finance, marketing, whatever that is. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. That's perfect. That's a perfect ending. Thank you, Bassem. Thank you, Abir. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your energy and your thoughts and your time.
Thank you, everyone. Now we have another fantastic panel on women in podcasting, and these are some very successful female podcasters in the region and around, which will once again be moderated by the lovely Juliet, and we'll just announce the name of the panelists in a second. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.